Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart. Welcome to Real Science Radio.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Fred, this is our second program on the ICC in Pittsburgh. I went there for a week. It was the greatest, the International Conference on Creationism.
Yeah, and you went there last second. It was kind of impromptu. And, you know, I came into the studio last week after a kind of a, you know, I think a 2 or 3 week break. So. Yeah. I came in, and normally we prepare quite a bit for our show. It was pretty much cold turkey. I mean, we talked a little bit, but
you
didn't know
anything. You flew
anything.
In from Italy. In fact, in the catacombs, we're going to do a show, and we'll talk about what you saw in the catacombs.
Right? It might have been something like a dinosaur. But yeah, it was really cool. Yeah. We got a show coming up.
Engraved on the walls.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll do that. But you came in the studio just straight off the street.
Yeah, and, you know, excited to hear that you went to the conference, and I was looking forward to talking to you about it and finding out what happened there. A lot of the things that happened at the conference was brand new to me while we were doing the radio show, and so it was genuine surprise of some of the really neat stuff.
Fun.
And I think maybe the highlight was your second night there when they had the keynote speaker where everybody,
Steve Taylor,
everybody's there to hear it. During the day, you go to breakout sessions and, you know, different units, but there, everybody's there and you're sitting there watching it. And lo and behold, they're playing clips off of Real Science Radio.
That's real encouraging. That was fun. The talk with Jack Horner offering famous scientists $23,000 to carbon-14 date a dinosaur bone that has soft tissue in it. He said, well, you know, you don't carbon-14 date those things. I said, well, you don't find soft tissue in them either, do you? I mean, why not?
But and then I think he grabbed you later and showed you some dinosaur bones and whatnot.
Yes, and they're doing more carbon dating and real exciting work. And we mentioned this last week, Fred, but it was rewarding to me to realize that our audience is on the cutting edge of these scientific issues. Anybody from our audience who listens to Real Science Radio, if they went to this conference, famous scientists from around the world, they would feel very much at home and understand the discussions. It was really encouraging.
Yeah, and you had said that you thought maybe 30 to 50% of the people there had already heard of Real Science Radio, and by the time you were done.
Well, not me.
Not just you, but
by the time the conference was done, I'd say almost everybody.
Well, yeah, and if the keynote speaker is playing, you know, stuff from our show
from Real Science Radio.
And he's telling where it's coming from.
That's encouraging, right?
Yeah, real encouraging.
Here, I mean, here, you and me in this little studio in a cabin in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains.
Hey, we got a studio audience today, though. That's cool. Huh?
We do. Hello, studio audience. I'd like to continue to talk about the conference and some of the speakers and what was discussed.
That sounds great. I mean, the other highlight, I think, for me last week and was a surprise was the real interesting discourse that occurred with Dr. Baumgartner.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's big on the catastrophic plate tectonics.
Yes.
And we're big supporters of Walt Brown's hydroplate theory.
Yes.
And wow, what an interesting exchange.
And because at these conferences, scientists who have different models, their models are on display, basically, for people. And they want people to support their models. But I think John Baumgartner, the software simulators he's been building to show the floodwaters on the Earth and how they would circulate and could they erode enough sediment and could they carry and deposit that sediment in just 150 days that the Bible speaks of in Genesis, he basically admitted without saying it that his model is in crisis.
His model's disproving his theory.
If you have enough sediment that you got to carry, say, in a river, well, a river can only carry so much sediment. And if you double the speed of the flow of the current, you significantly increase the carrying capacity of the water. And you double the speed again, you could carry a lot more sediment. Well, John Baumgartner, with volcanoes and earthquakes and so on, he can't get enough energy in the floodwaters to carry the sediments.
So he's got a missing energy problem.
He's got a big problem.
Now, does Walt Brown's hydroplate theory have a missing energy problem?
No. Well, not for carrying the sediments, it sure doesn't.
I think
he has the energy for the entire model. An energy budget is the first thing in the mind of an engineer. Now, a geologist, they don't think in terms of energy budgets. So for John Baumgartner, this is 20 years after his model, and he's just getting around to wondering, is there enough energy to do this? He ended up saying the only way he could make it work is if a planet the size of a moon passed nearby the Earth, very close.
A planet the size of the moon passed is really close to the Earth. Was that enough?
By.
Seems like I remember there's...
And that was not
that
enough.
Wasn't enough.
He needed another planet the size of the moon to fly by.
Another, that's two.
And then a third.
A third.
And a fourth, and a fifth, and a sixth.
Wow.
Six moons to fly by really close to the Earth, like between the moon and the Earth.
So you'd have to really guesstimate the odds of just one planet or moon-sized object doing that. He needs six.
Right. So it would obviously have to be a supernatural thing that God did. If the Bible tells us what happened and it requires a miracle, like the parting of the Red Sea, well, then it's reasonable to say then this miracle happened because the text requires it.
Yes.
Now, God intervening in Genesis, he did that a lot. So there were miraculous things, but the text needs to point you to the miracle that's needed. And why is it needed? Well, John Baumgartner is not having six moons come by in order to have a global flood. He's having them come by to explain how to deposit the sediments.
Wow.
That seems unreasonable.
That's
not reasonable.
Theory in crisis.
The text is not calling for that kind of miracle. So Walt Brown, his hydroplate model, the floodwaters come from under the crust of the earth. The fountains of the great deep broke forth. And when that happened, the water came out from 10 miles or more beneath the surface, and the continents fell in and crushed the subterranean
chamber. Boy, that sounds like a lot of energy can be produced from something like that.
Yeah, think about a tsunami, right? The tsunami wave reaches what? Speeds of 500 miles an hour?
Oh, yeah, amazing. And they're triggered by what? An earthquake.
An earthquake and the tremendous force and energy in a tsunami. As we've seen, tragically, what, 150,000 people killed? Was that in the Christmas Day earthquake from a few years back in Indonesia? That tsunami is not even a hiccup compared to North America collapsing through the floodwaters 1 mile down.
Wow.
There's no comparison.
Not at all.
So the energy released by gravity and the subterranean fountains of the great deep collapsing, that is the energy that John Baumgartner can't find in his model.
And there's more evidence for it too, right? Like the pelting of the moon.
Well, that's big also because at this conference, there were Steve Austin, the Mount St. Helens guy, and Danny Faulkner. They said something that I was a bit, I know that they believe this, but it was discouraging to hear it. And I love these guys. I mean, we sell their videos. Oh. They love the Lord. They're young earth creationists. But here's what Steve Austin said. He said, well, the moon was pummeled with all those craters. It got those craters during the creation week.
The creation week.
Creation week. And Danny Faulkner basically said, amen. This was during a panel and that he agreed with him. I'm so glad that other leaders in the creation movement, like Wayne Spencer, point out that that is not something. Those creators speak of destruction and something wrong with the system. They don't speak of God. When God said it is good,
it
is good.
It's very good. Yeah. That's the first thought that came to my mind. Yeah. Would that really be part of the very good creation week?
Right. So that's why I like Wayne Spencer trying to show people, like, for example, would the solar system been filled with dust in the very good creation on day four? I wouldn't think so. That dust, those meteoroids, and even
comets
and asteroids, very destructive things.
Yeah. Sort of they look cool, but they're destructive.
Yeah.
And they're really big, dirty ice balls, right?
Yeah.
It was Walt Brown's theory that really introduced me to the idea that comets are the result of the global flood, that they came out of the breaking forth of the water from the great deep.
Yes. So when the crust of the earth cracked and the continents are falling in to the subterranean chamber, the water escaped with such velocity, it reached escape velocity, left Earth's gravity and pummeled one side of the moon. And that's why the near side is pummeled so severely. The backside is just pockmarked.
Well, it just occurred to me. We've discovered something that scientists have been looking for years.
Whoa, wow.
We've discovered the Oort cloud. It just happens to be underneath the Earth's surface.
Yeah, right. Where did the comets come from?
Because they can't explain why all these comets that go around the sun, they lose part of their mass.
They're short
they should not
comets.
Be here anymore.
Right.
If the universe or if the solar system is billions of years old, they shouldn't be here. But they are. Right. So they invented this Oort cloud. Well, we found it.
Yeah. It's beneath your feet. You know, Baumgartner's model, catastrophic plate tectonics, it doesn't have the energy. It doesn't meet the energy budget.
And his model is showing that.
Yeah, his own software, simulation software, is showing he needs six moons.
Six moons, yep.
And then they're saying the moon is pockmarked because that was God's very good creation. That doesn't sound right.
It doesn't fit.
And all those micrometeorites that are dangerous to our astronauts and all the meteoroids and all that stuff. But then also there was something even worse than all that. And I think those things are examples that, hey, our models are not really working.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to go to what I think are desperate measures. Well, then there's another that's worse.
Yeah.
You know how bad it is. And I was thankful that Danny Faulkner, in this instance, he was the white knight. He was the hero because John Baumgartner, again, who we love, young Earth Christian scientist, said something that the audience was in shock. I was just...
Couldn't believe what you were hearing. I mean, I was in shock when you told me after the show last week.
And this
whole ICC conference was so interesting. I had to get more information out of you after the show was over.
Yeah, it was fun. And so, well, what John Baumgartner said, with their RATE project, they have documented that there was rapid, accelerated radioactive decay sometime in the recent past. We know that. The evidence is overwhelming. But what John Baumgartner does not know is why, and he admits this, why was there rapid decay? And where did the radioactive elements come from in the first place? Because they're dangerous. They produce birth defects. So how could a perfect world have all this uranium and thorium and radon gas and all? It's dangerous.
Did you have a DVD of one of our radio shows that talk about that?
Well, right? I should have brought a few.
Yeah.
So, Fred, of course, they're on our website, like realscienceradio.com/radioactivity.
Yeah.
And that was one of my favorite shows ever. So, Fred, here's what John Baumgartner said. And Danny Faulkner, the astronomer from Answers in Genesis, immediately confronted him in a gracious way. You know, the Bible says, when you speak to your elders, do this as to a father.
Yes.
You know, with respect and gently. And Danny did, but very firmly, John Baumgartner said, when you look at the radioactive dating for lunar rocks, he said, we have to conclude that the moon was created before day four.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's
that was devastating.
Not good. It is.
And Danny Faulkner, to his credit, he stood up and he said, John, I'm shocked to hear you say that. We have been fighting this for decades. Hugh Ross, Reasons to Believe, the theistic evolutionist, the old earthers, they all say that the moon was created before day four and only on day four did it become visible. We have all strongly, with one voice and one accord, said Genesis 1 is clear. And what you're saying now is antithetical to biblical creationism.
Yeah, it's relying on man's opinion. He's resorting to secular viewpoints against, you know, that's counter to the Bible. And he's choosing, in this case, he's choosing the secular opinion.
Yeah.
It's better to put your trust in the Lord than confidence in man.
Yeah.
That's a center verse of the Bible.
Amen. And let God be true and every man a liar. And John Baumgartner will admit that he doesn't know what caused radioactive decay. And he doesn't know why it would be on the earth, because it causes birth defects. So where did it come from and what caused the rapid accelerated decay? He doesn't know. Walt Brown's theory, go to realscienceradio.com/radioactivity. We talk through Walt's theory on the origin of radioactivity. By the way, Fred, I don't know if you know this, but Walt Brown and Peggy, his wife, listened to that show And he called me and said they loved that show.
Oh, great.
And they are stocking on their store. They have inventory at waltzcreationscience.com. They only have about maybe 8 products they sell in the beginning, the book and the CD version. It has the whole book on the CD and a few other products. And they have Real Science Radio's presentation of the hydroplate theory.
So this is interesting. I mentioned this to a friend of mine that I go to lunch with occasionally. And he's, you know, he's a fellow believer, and he was just enthralled with this whole radioactivity, where it came about because of the whole thing with earthquakes and how there's all these eyewitness accounts of lightning and from earthquakes. And the reason why he took such a keen interest in it, he's a historian. He loves the Civil War. Well, there's something else he loves, and that's all these really bad earthquakes of the late 1800s and early 1900s. He studies those,
right.
And he knows of all those reports.
Earthquake lights.
Yeah, exactly.
Earthquake electricity.
And he was so, interested in when I told him of this topic, and he believes it because he's read these accounts. So these people seeing this massive amount.
You said you went to lunch with him?
Yes.
You didn't invite me.
Oh, what's up with that?
You think, is he local? Could we do this again?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to go because I'd like to pick his brain and add that to our website.
Yeah, definitely.
His information. And I bet you Walt Brown will be interested in his information.
Yes.
Because it's being amassed in these scientific reports on all these earthquake electrical events.
Yeah.
And so here's what John Baumgartner said. And we did a show on this just a couple weeks ago. Our Real Science Radio list of answers to hydroplate objections. We talked about John Baumgartner saying Walt Brown must be wrong on origin of radioactivity and earthquake electricity. Because the crystals in granite are not aligned. And if they're not aligned, if they're randomly pointing in every direction, then no matter how much pressure you put on the crustal rock of the earth, the granite, you're not going to get any voltages. They have to be aligned. If they're random, they cancel each other out. But if they're aligned, then Walt Brown's theory starts to come into play. And John Baumgartner wrote in a critique of Walt's work, he wrote, there is no evidence that crystals are aligned or have ever been aligned. On that show, we reported on the scientific journals, the geophysical series that talk about the alignment of crystals and granite and all the evidence of earthquake lights and all that. So we're asking John Baumgartner to retract that one criticism.
Did you get a chance to talk to him about this?
I did talk to him. In fact, John came up to me the last day of the conference and he said, Bob, I know you sent me a question and I responded to you. So when you go back, please check. And he did, but he sent us his critique that we had already read. So that was, so we're continuing. He's very gracious, very humble.
Yeah.
And you know, I love him.
Yeah. He's a very nice guy.
And he's accomplished so much, but you know, this idea of catastrophic plate tectonics, it's wrong.
It's wrong.
Wrong.
Yep.
And I assert that he can't tell us where all the sediments were eroded from because you can't get that much erosion from the continents. And so the erosion, the sediments all over the earth, a mile deep on the continents, they came from the subterranean chamber.
Exactly.
And the crack, the crust of the earth, the mid-oceanic ridge that cracked all over the globe, that's where the sediments came from. And so that's why we could be confident in his model that he can't have enough energy to carry the sediments in the floodwaters, and he can't
There's
get the erosion to start
them.
With.
That's right.
Yes. So that was all the Baumgartner and Stephen Austin and Danny Faulkner stuff.
Let's just pray that this is just a little hiccup with Dr. Baumgartner, and we'll just keep working on showing him the evidence.
Amen. And thank God for all his work.
Absolutely.
And he's encouraged me over the last 20 years immensely by his bold stand for the God of Genesis.
Yes, absolutely.
And so much that he's done has been so valuable. So then also, there was something else from Steve Austin had to do with Walt Brown.
Okay.
So, you know, I noticed all the Walt Brown things.
Yeah.
Steve Austin said this in a presentation on superfaults and pseudotachyolites.
Okay.
Now, pseudotachyolites
okay.
are interesting things. You know, you look at layers in a geologic column and there's a road cut somewhere and you look at all these strata and geologists around the world, they know that there's these pseudotachylites. Usually they're narrow bands. Mm-hmm. They might be a few inches wide or so. And that is where the rock moved so quickly that it got to super high temperatures. And we're not talking gradual plate tectonics, like move the rate that your fingernail grows. We're talking like Heart Mountain Detachment. We're talking like land speed records.
So the best explanation for this small slither of a layer is rapid movement.
Rapid movement. And so in that presentation by one of his young PhD associates, Timothy Clary and Steve Austin and others, Steve Austin said at the end, supercritical water. And my ears perked right up, because for how many years has Walt Brown been publishing the properties of supercritical water and how this is such a significant factor during the global flood?
Now, did your hand go up too? And Steve's like, we'll take questions at the end.
Yeah. No, I skipped this one. But Steve Austin said, and he and Walt have competing theories, mm-hmm. you know, on the Grand Canyon and so on. He said supercritical water is very friendly to the creationist view. All of us scientists should be looking for the effect of supercritical water and how it behaves at depth as you go down.
Okay.
And so supercritical water is so different than it's not a liquid and it's not a vapor. It's something else. And it behaves in the most extraordinary way. And so the mainstream secular scientific world is, you know, very aware of supercritical water and its amazing properties, but it's not something we deal with in our normal lives. Mm-hmm. And so it's not popular, but it was exciting to me, another vindication of Walt Brown, to see Steve Austin saying this supercritical water, this is where it's at. We have
We need more time researching it? Is that there's a commitment now?
Well, certainly he's urging scientists, geologists, mm-hmm. especially, and geophysicists to study the effect of supercritical water in understanding the global flood.
Okay.
So that, and I know we're not getting into that, but that's a topic for its own show.
Yeah. Well, Bob, you know, given all this about Walt Brown, I mean, you know, we believe so many things that he's talked about and wrote about have really come to fruition.
Yeah.
I don't understand all this, hate to say it, but negativity towards Walt Brown from other really prominent creation scientists. Not all of them, but there just seems to be more than I'd expect.
It's almost like there was never a honeymoon period, you know, because the scientists look at Walt's work with how do we prove this is false? Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back to, I think, the 1970s when Walt Brown worked for Henry Morris.
Now he worked for him.
Yeah. Okay. Henry Morris is the father of the modern creation movement. He founded ICR and CRS, which you're the webmaster for the Creation Research Society.
Yeah, he's one of the co-authors of the Genesis Flood, groundbreaking creation book.
ICR's headquarters in Southern California. They recently moved it to Texas. Mm-hmm. Well, in all their history, they only one time had an affiliate, a branch. It was the Midwest Center for Scientific Creationism. So Walt was, I think, maybe the second director. Now, he raised his own funds, so ICR Central, you know, West, they didn't fund the Midwest Center, but it was under Henry Morris. And so Walt Brown was tremendously successful funding the center. I mean, he had been such an accomplished scientist. And Henry Morris wrote a history of the modern creation movement. In fact, Fred, I've got it right there. In fact, here it is. Let me grab it from this. Look, I have two versions of it.
Two versions.
That's the first version. That's the second version. And Fred, Walt Brown, he took one for the team early on. He began to oppose the vapor canopy theory.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And now the whole...
Because I know where that ended up.
It ended up he was right.
Yeah. I mean, that was the big thing at one time. The water vapor... It still holds on with some people. They don't realize that it's not credible anymore.
Right.
But it's few, but every now and then you'll hear like a layman creationist.
Well, layman creationists still believe
scientists.
The professional scientists have almost universally given up on the vapor canopy theory because it doesn't work. You can't flood the earth with the vapor coming down.
Yeah.
and it just doesn't do what
it
was
supposed to do. There's a lot of problems with it.
And the whole Earth overheats.
But this is interesting. So Walt Brown was the one who started pointing out some of the problems.
Full-time, not just writing an article one time and saying maybe it doesn't work. This was part of his seminars, which were attracting thousands of people.
And this is interesting because I know Henry Morris is really big on the water canopy.
Yeah, he got it from a secular author. He introduced it to young earth creationism. You know, there's a verse that makes it sound like, well, maybe that's it. And so Henry Morris, who we love dearly, he's now with the Lord. His son now runs ICR.
He'll be here at our creation meeting in Denver next month.
His son, yes. Henry Morris III.
Yeah, should be a great talk.
Isn't that exciting?
Second Friday.
I can't wait till he comes out. At any rate, Henry Morris II, he didn't like this, you know, opposition. So in this book, The History of Modern Creationism, it was a little bit negative when he got to Walt Brown. He said he was an excellent scientist who excelled, and he was brilliant and super qualified.
Yeah, and he got his degree at Lowly MIT.
Right, PhD.
And he was a professor at the Air Force Academy.
Exactly. So Walt Brown is sharp
and
qualified. But Henry was just a little bit negative on Walt Brown in his History of Modern Creationism. Now, he created then a new updated edition that left Walt out completely. So it wasn't negative, but it left out that chapter of history. In the last years of Henry Morris's life, and I know this from Rob Yardley, he's a mover and shaker in Southern California, very involved with creation for many years, with Ken Ham, with Henry Morris, with Walt Brown. He moves in all the circles very well. He has good relationships with everybody. And he said to me recently, we were talking, and he said, Bob, when Henry Morris would speak to groups in the last years, he would say, my work on earth is done, but the Lord has so many fabulous creation scientists working. And he would start the list with Walt Brown. He'd start with Walt Brown. And so, well, praise God for that, right? Because for one, we need to get over our personality.
Well, that's interesting history. Yeah, that explains a lot.
Yeah, so I think Walt took one for the team in opposing the vapor canopy theory. He was dealt quite a hand because of it. But I think he's being vindicated in so many ways. So, Fred, we're about out of time. You know what was funny? At ICR, Ryan Thomas, talking about the dinosaur soft tissue. And he said, well, the atheist said, well, it's there because it's in these bones. And these bones are so big, you know.
they're protecting
it for millions of years. And he says, well, it's also in little bones. And then he said, it's also in feathers.
Feathers.
And it's also in dinosaur
skin. Feathers are real protective.
It's also in skin, so it can't be the bone. Anyway, it was a fun conference. Thank you, Fred Williams. Another fun show.
And Thanks, Bob.
You're welcome. And our website is realscienceradio.com. Realscienceradio.com. Please shop at our store. That helps us stay online. Get our Real Science Radio CDs. And if you would, make a donation. Help us stay on the air. May God bless you.
Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist?, Bob Enyart debates atheist Zaketh, a psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist? And then Mount St. Helens, the explosive evidence for catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-NYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.